detached. So not dwelling on all the things that I have now begged, and now we are going to really have a little party here. The sannyasi is practicing this kind of sense control by being detached, sharing what he has collected, and in this way not developing this mentality, it's mine, and being so attached to the fruits of his labor. In Bhagavad Gita it is explained, karmani-vadikāra-sthi-māfade-sukhadā-cana, that one may engage in activity and one may work, but one may not be attached to the fruit of one's activity. So the sannyasi must realize this, and therefore he is practicing this particular discipline. As I said, this is a discipline which is directly part of Varnashram, and as such it is a discipline of the mode of goodness. When living in a completely transcendental situation, then it's different. Then it is not required to be so rigid about what one eats. Then one can take simply Krishna prasadam. That is transcendental. Yagya-sistati-nu-santo-muchante-sava-kil-bisaya. Unless one takes yagya-sista, that which are the remnants of sacrifice to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Vishnu or Sri Krishna, unless one takes such remnants, one eats only sin. Therefore, taking Krishna prasad is glorious. Such Krishna prasad is not only helping us to control the senses, but rather such Krishna prasad is lifting us above the senses, because it makes one attached to Lord Krishna. So this is the process that the devotees are following. Therefore, the devotees of Lord Chaitanya are not so rigid in very, very detached, or having a very detached approach to eating. That's not so much the issue. They can eat nice and sumptuous foodstuffs, absolutely. Still, a sannyasi, even in the tradition of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, will be austere. It is also instructed to Raghunath Das Goswami. Raghunath Das Goswami was particularly taking up the renounced order of life, and Raghunath Das Goswami was receiving instructions from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and it is said, "Ei vairagi bhai balona kaibe," balona kaibe, that one should not eat very tasty things in the renounced order of life. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, after taking sannyas, was also strict. He wasn't ready to accept very opulent foodstuffs. At that time, he was invited by Advaita Acharya, who said, "I have just made an arrangement of which is just suitable to a sannyasi. Little bit of rice and a little bit of sak, just like that, a simple arrangement. Now you have taken sannyas, and since sannyas, you have not taken any alms. You have not eaten anything. So please honor me and take the first alms in my house. Little rice, little sak." He came. There was a huge arrangement, huge. And Advaita Acharya was pushing Lord Chaitanya to take all this prasadam. This happened again and again. We see a similar thing appearing in Jagannath Puri after Rath Yatra, when Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya is inviting Lord Chaitanya for Prasad, he also cheated him and invited him for prasadam, and he had a huge amount of prasadam, 1 man of rice. A man is about 40 kilos or something. 40 kilos of rice. I mean, there were banana leaves, and usually in India they cut the banana leaves in places where they have banana leaves and make plates out of them, but about as big as a Bhagavatam folded open. But here there were whole banana leaves and huge arrangements. So Lord Chaitanya said, how nice, you've made such a nice opulent offering to the Lord. This is very good. We are really appreciating this. And then just give me a little bit of the remnants. But Sakabhauma Bhattacharya said, No, you can sit there. He said, oh no, that is the seat for Lord Krishna. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya said, we know very well who you are. You can sit there. Lord Chaitanya said, no, but I'm a sannyasi. How can I eat so much? And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya again said, you cannot cheat us. We know very well that in Jagannath Puri you are eating 55 times a day. We know it very well. So we know very well what you can eat. And then he forced Lord Chaitanya to eat everything. He ate everything. Which is one of the miracles that Lord Chaitanya performed, you know, because 1 man of rice, come on, you know. I mean, Bengalis, they are famous for eating healthy quantities of rice, you know, and we have seen it, isn't it, Atul? It is amazing. You see a mountain of rice, even in the evening. And in the morning, they have digested it, you know. I mean, that would be enough to finish me off. That would be the end, you know. That is, it's like, it was nice, but that would be it. But no problem for them. So they can eat rice, but no one can eat 40 kilos of rice. Who can eat 40 kilos? But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu could. Just like Krishna, at the time of the Govardhan Puja, when the Lord himself manifested himself as a blackish form, a huge form, and began to eat all the offerings. Anyo, what more you have? Bring, is there more? So Krishna has no limits in what he can eat. And that is spiritual. In the spiritual world, there is no problem. If there is a gulab jamun contest, it is not that the winner afterwards is sick for 1 week. No, there one can easily eat and nothing happens. That is the nature of the spiritual world. So Lord Chaitanya was the Supreme Lord, but he was strict in his eating habits. He himself was renounced and simple, and would eat very simple. So still, the sannyasi is meant to eat simple. Of course, sometimes when he is invited, then he has to eat not so simple, and that is the difficulty. One has to eat on behalf of the Supreme Lord. Because the brahmanas and the sadhus, they are eating on behalf of the Lord. It is said the mouth of the brahmana is representing the Supreme Lord. So the brahmana can eat for the Lord, he can speak about the Lord, and in this way a sannyasi sometimes has these duties also, to eat on behalf of the Lord. I have gone through this myself. My record is 8 programs in a row with 8 meals, and in the last house they cooked a huge feast, and I said, you shouldn't have done that. It's too much. What to do? So it's very nice to eat simple, actually, because then the eating is not distracting us. But we cannot control our tongue, and we put so many things in the mouth, and then after,
oh, feel so uncomfortable, or you digest it all, and then gradually it grows on all sides, and oh, boom, the elephant the elephant is joining the kirtan. Then everything gets difficult, huffing and puffing up the staircase, hardly able to pronounce your rounds, sitting in a chair, everything becomes troublesome. So this eating certainly is a difficult thing. Yeah. If you don't eat, don't feel good. If you eat, also don't feel good. Before eating, I'm starving. I'm totally starving. After eating, I'm finished. What a condition. This eating is too much. Before eating, you're just not comfortable. After eating, not comfortable. And in the long term, what doesn't do it? What it doesn't do to us is eating. So gradually one has to learn to eat in a more controlled way. See, the Prabhupada used to tell a story about two elderly Bengali gentlemen. And one had invited the other for a big feast. So the guests arrived and he saw all the preparations and he said, you made such a nice arrangement. It's amazing what you've done. And that was it. He never ate it. He only looked at it. And then the servants, they ate everything. And the gentleman, just one invited, how nice. And it wasn't just that he looked, no, because he was elder. He had, throughout his life, tasted it all. So he knew the taste and he could just see that it was nicely prepared. You can see, whether a puri is a good puri, or whether it is like a soggy puri, or like clunk, 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 one of those hard pieces of puri, that you can knock a hole in the wall with them. So one can see. So these men, they would just simply look. So when I used to hear that story years ago, I used to think, strange story. Now I begin to think, very cultured, very nice. So it is said that a child can never eat enough, no problem. Can eat all day and it's never enough. And an old man can never eat too little. Can never eat too little. That's actually the fact. Yeah. So Krishna arranges it that at one point in time, the digestion doesn't work anymore. The teeth are beginning to break down or fall out. At one point, eating just becomes difficult. But in the Western world, we do whatever we can to be able to eat up till the very end of life. Even nowadays, they put screws in the jaws and screw new teeth, new artificial teeth on top so that you can still go strong. And digested or not, you can buy in the chemist all kind of things to enzymes and then things to deal with the acid, and you just take pills before eating and pills after eating, and then you can still do it. Keep on going. Don't give up, no matter what. And then, because of all the cheese subjis and all the cholesterol, your heart clogs up, and no problem. We'll just take a vein from your leg and put it there and you get a bypass and then you can do it again until that one's clogged up also. And then you can get double bypass. So this is the modern way of life. And I must say, in ISKCON, no one has ever died from under eating. That has not yet happened. It's like, so for us it's really a challenge, to keep it simple. That's really, and that's where it gets to. Srila Prabhupada actually
didn't start this whole program of daily stuffing yourself with endless cheese sabji and fried pakoras and all that. That was not actually the idea. The idea was that throughout the week, just rice dal sabji chapati, something basic and simple, and then on the weekend, yes, once a week. And in Karsis, he was not against fasting. At least Prabhupada himself fasted till noon on Ekadasis. And in India, that became a standard. In all the temples, they used to fast till noon on Ekadasis. That was it. Of course, these things are not prescribed. And if we have to work and do so many things, all right, we can eat something. But this verse from Rupa Goswami in the Upadeshamrita, tongue, belly and genitals in one line, is a concern. That sexual agitation is the result of overeating. And this is some cause of concern, because we don't need that. We really don't. We already have trouble enough as it is to control our senses, so why would you want to add to it? The sexual agitation is already in the mind. So why would we add sexual agitation on the level of the body? Because sexual agitation can come from two directions, really, from the mind and from the body. The mind can be totally peaceful, but when the body becomes agitated, then the mind also becomes agitated. So therefore, it is recommended at least keep the body in a peaceful condition. Because this is our biggest difficulty in devotional service, in this process of bhakti yoga, to deal with sex desire. That is the one thing that we're all struggling with. Some struggle with it successfully, and some struggle with it less successfully. But that doesn't mean that there is no struggle. It is difficult. Absolutely. Very difficult. So, a successful struggle will generally be the result of a good determination, a clear understanding of the goal of life. First of all, that we are properly situated in transcendental knowledge, and that we understand why to do such a thing. And the next thing is, it has to do with being properly situated in activities that support celibacy. That will help. So both are important. Therefore, controlled eating is part of those activities. Maybe also interaction with members of the opposite sex should be also regulated and cannot just be without any restriction. Something has to be there in terms of regulating it. Otherwise, something will wake up in us, and then it is difficult. It is said, Jayato visya pumsan sangat tejuka jayate, that when the thought of sense gratification arises in the mind, or the thought of sexual activity arises in the mind, that if one starts dwelling on it, allowing the mind to think about it, then the result is one develops attachment to these thoughts. And then from one thing comes another. Therefore, it is said there are eight types of illicit sex. And these eight types of illicit sex are including smaranam, kirtanam, keli, preksanam. There are more. So it says one should not remember sexual activity. That means one should not dwell on it, one should meditate on it. Kirtanam, one should not speak about illicit sex, and you know, and make some jokes about it and like that. Keli, Keli is where playing games, you know, playing subtle games. Pratsanam, looking. One should not look at certain things that are sexually related. Keli pratsanam guyam. Asanam, one should not sit with a member of the opposite sex in a secluded place. Advayam, one should also not meditate, and nor should one finally engage in illicit sex. So these are like eight stages of illicit sex that are identified in the scriptures, and it's quite interesting to see that how far it goes. Of course, it is said in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the chapter where the Brahmin boy Sringi is cursing, it is mentioned there in verses that in Bhagavatam that in the age of Kali there's a special concession, and that there is no reaction for any sinful thought. So that's good. It says in other ages one is already becoming contaminated by just the thought. Well, if we would become contaminated, if we would get reactions for our thoughts, then we would be in hot water. Yeah. What to do? In this age, the mind is not so pure and the thoughts are not so pure. But one has to practice to cut the thoughts, the sinful thoughts. It says, however, that in the age of Kali, if you have a pious thought, that immediately you get benefits from that. So it's a special blessing on the age of Kali. So just think of pious things and already you're getting benefit from it. So it is said that one must immediately stop the process of the mind that tends to go into a series of thoughts that are just like a train. They say the train of thought. And that is a very good metaphor. Hare Krishna. The train of thought is a good metaphor because it is showing how one thought is just leading to a next one, and leading to a next one, and leading to a next one, and then oftentimes the last thought is sexual activity. And in this way, hundreds of times, thousands of times a day, such train of thoughts appear within the mind. And this is the difficulty. So if one begins to notice in which direction it's going, and one can see, it's going into the direction of lusty desires, just like a dog. They have now these dogs on these special lines that can go very long, right? And you see, you know, they let them go long, and then you push the button, and then it becomes short again. Right? So one must keep the mind on a line like that. Yeah, when we can sometimes give the mind freedom, but when the mind goes in the wrong direction, push the button, pull it back, and hold it tight. Right? Don't allow the mind to go into a whole train of thought. But it's amazing how the mind works. Sometimes, you know, for example, there may be some music, a song from the old days, you know, and suddenly you hear the song, and next moment you remember where you used to be when that song was playing, and who you were with, and next moment, you know, you're there. And next moment, you're reliving the whole situation. And that was before Krishna consciousness, and therefore the four regulative principles were not yet there. And before you know it, right? You suddenly wake up, right? And you're back in 2010. And just, but for 30 seconds, totally somewhere else. This is what the mind does, again and again. So we must get more of a grip on our mental process. So that's part of Krishna consciousness, of the practice of Krishna consciousness, that we learn to control the mind and don't just let the thoughts go wherever they want to go. And just daydreaming. Yes. I still remember that years ago I was in Amsterdam and it was raining buckets, as it always does, right, in Holland. And God, does it rain in that country. So people with pale faces and a red nose with an eternal drop hanging on the nose. And I was walking there in that miserable place, you know, gray sky, 6 months, no sun, and just saw the poster of the travel agent, a beautiful beach, blue ocean and sun. And next moment, before I knew it, I had already bought the ticket. It goes like that. Sometimes the mind just goes in. Then I flew to Kenya, which was very sunny and very nice, on Mombasa, on the beach. It was good, although not that good, because the sand was too hot. I went to sit under the palm trees and as I was under the palm trees, suddenly, plop, a scorpion. I go like, wow, you know, real scorpion. Wait till I get back home and I tell them about this one. How I fought off the scorpion on the beach. It's going to be a good story. But then, another scorpion. I'm looking up, said, these trees are full of scorpions. So I said, well, no worries, I'll just go for a swim in the ocean. And I was heading for the ocean and the locals came and said, what are you doing? I said, I'm going to have a swim. They said, no, you can't swim now, because when the tide is high, then the sharks come over the reef. I go, oh. okay. Thinking the tide, how long is it going to take for the tide to change? So I was sitting on the beach with a towel over my head, right, for shade, thinking about karma and how you can't get away from karma. If you're meant to suffer, you're going to suffer no matter what you do. The material world. Oh. So a devotee is not constantly preoccupied in trying to create all kinds of enjoyable situations in the material world. A devotee lets it go. And the enjoyment is somewhere else. It's not so much about the sunshine or the rain or the this or the that. It's more about Krishna, worshipping Krishna, hearing about Krishna, having a nice spiritual program. And that's where we fix ourselves. And then we can tolerate. Then we can tolerate. I said, no, it's okay. I don't want the pakoras. No, thanks. No. You can have the samosa. No problem. Give it to the kids. When you're 20, you eat anything you want and it's no problem. It's great. Right? You can do any damn thing you want. You can go to a Rati Asha and just go completely berserk, be a little tired, and have a good sleep, and do it again the next day. Try that 25 years later. You go for the killer Rati Yatra. Let's forget it then, the mic. No need mic. And do without mic. So go for the killer Rati Yatra and you're carried out on a stretcher, and 1 week later, you know, you start to talk again. So time is like that. So time is designed
for giving up sense gratification. Time is designed for renunciation. Renunciation is not just an idea that someone came up with, somebody who was a bit sour and who basically said, you know, like, yeah, all this is sense enjoyment, it's just material entanglement, you know, and really, you know, you shouldn't be enjoying like that, you know, it's sinful, it's not that some frustrated, sour person who really couldn't, somehow or other couldn't get any enjoyment, invented renunciation to punish everybody else, right? No, renunciation is actually, it is Krishna's arrangement. It naturally begins to manifest, right? Naturally. Gradually one says, no, let it go. Did I ever tell you the story about the clown that came to the Sunday feast? In Germany we had a clown at the Sunday feast, not just any clown, a Russian clown from a state circus. Now, these Russians are good, you know, I mean. So, he was a good clown, and he, yeah, the whole thing, they're natural clowns. I mean, you know, nothing, but they're very good. So, this one was very expert, and he was spinning all kinds of balls around also on his. So he sat on this stool and he was spinning balls on his fingers, spinning balls on his toes, and he even had one on a stick on his nose while he was making funny faces. So it was good and funny at the same time, and he was expert. What it had to do with Krishna consciousness, I don't know. Why we had that for the Sunday feast, don't ask me. But anyway, after that I had to speak, and somehow or other, he inspired me, you know, he inspired me. So, he inspired me, and I came up in the lecture with the example of the stream of opportunities. And it is flowing along, and when you're young and you're on the banks, oh yes, you take 3, 4, 5 at the same time and spin them around. Throw them up like this, throw them up like that. Yeah. No worries, babe. Cool. But as time goes by and the opportunities start flowing, you become more purposeful. You're not so playful anymore. Now you're going for the good ones. There's one coming. Don't miss it. Got it. Bad. Good coming. Okay. Got it. Yes, got them all. But time moves along and gradually these opportunities just keep on going, and it gets a little difficult to keep up with it all, you know, my back, my neck, my head, my toes, my nose, my everything, and there went one, just as you said, achoo, one opportunity, anyway, it wasn't that good anyway. So, with time, you miss a few, and in the end, there were two old people sitting on a bench, looking at the stream of opportunities, and one said to the other, "That was a good one." So, renunciation is natural, and why waste our time and get so attached when we are young? Yeah, let's go for it and get a million attachments that later on we have to overcome. Yes, let's do it. That is the nature of material entanglement. It is painful to cut these attachments. Difficult. Give up smoking. Woo. Difficult. Once you're on. Oh, such a struggle. Or for an Indian to give up drinking tea is close to impossible. Everything is possible. You can, but two things. You cannot give up your mother and not give up drinking tea. Anything else is possible, but not that. No tea. no tea. Ah, rooibos. It doesn't taste. That's all you get.
So, why start the habits? Why start all the habits? So that is culture. Culture is explaining to us why enter into so many habits that one has to break again later on. So in Krishna consciousness, therefore, when you're young and when you're totally fit for enjoying, young boys, young girls, everything is ready for enjoyment, everything is fine, that's when we impose brahmacharya. That's when we say, and now you practice celibacy. The energy is there, the strength is there, the beauty is there, everything is there. And now, don't do it. Isn't that tough? Huh? That's tough. It's a tough process. It takes some philosophy to be able to deal with that. Obviously. It takes some philosophy to logically see, yes, if I actually now go for it, I will just get myself so entangled and so attached, and then I will have to rise above that again. Shouldn't do that. Better I stay detached now. Better I stay free from this now. Well, at least in a regulated way, then, in marriage, in a controlled way. But if it's not required, then let it go. Let it go. Krishna is more important. But then again, can we renounce so young for a whole life? And we are afraid to renounce premature because then you're afraid that somewhere on the path, as you're walking, suddenly one day from behind a tree, your material desires, they just appear and attack you with machine guns and just pump you full of so many material, and then you fall and there's nothing you can do. So premature renunciation is also not possible. Therefore, one must practice the mode of goodness. And if one can sustain that over a longer period of time, then there's a beginning of renunciation. Then, when simultaneously we get more and more absorbed in devotional service and the higher taste develops, yes, then who wants to bother with all the entanglement? Forget it. No woman, no cry. Excuse me. then we are following in the footsteps of the sages, and in that way we are heading back to Godhead. What is so good about the material world? What is so good about the material world? You have heard about anarthas, stumbling blocks on the path of spiritual progress, isn't it? Well, the whole material world is an anartha. Everything. The whole thing. There's nothing good about the material world. Nothing. What do you think about that? Nothing good. Zilch. Absolutely nothing. If you're free from all illusion, then that's the truth. And all we can do is make the best use of a bad bargain. That's the truth and nothing but the truth. And so help me God. As we put our hand on the holy book and remember Krishna. So,
I'll end with one last story. That once Giriraj Das Brahmachari said to Srila Prabhupada, "Srila Prabhupada, sometimes I'm in Maya." You know, and Prabhupada said, "What do you mean, sometimes you're in Maya? You're always in Maya." So, and he was, you know, a respected brahmachari, you know, when Prabhupada said that. So, that we can think about, you know, that we can think about. Maybe we are still covered by Maya, and maybe therefore we are still thinking that there is something good in the material world. Okay, I let the cat out of the bag today. Sannyasis, they sometimes hide it, you know. And some people, yeah, take your time. Yes, of course. But sometimes we let it out and just say, there is really nothing in this material world. Nothing. It's just ananarta. The whole material world is ananarta. All right. Thank you very much. I know that's a bit much just before breakfast, but anyway, you know, hope you'll manage it. Any questions? Any comments? Atul.
Regarding sustaining the mind of goodness, sometimes we get it just gets compromised because of this kind of service pressures, and then we kind of feel obligated. And so, how much can one be attached to that standard and that?
Yeah, the mode of goodness. Well, once I gave a lecture on Varnashram. And I compared Varnashram to a set of crutches. And that, you know, if you can't walk, you know, you have an injury or you're incapacitated, then you need crutches. You're walking on crutches. So the whole system of Varnashram are simply crutches. We're just walking on crutches. Well, I gave a whole lecture about that. And the next morning, I had about 350 emails. From all over the world, from places where I've never been, overnight someone had transcribed the thing and it was sent all over the internet and there was big protests. How dare you call Varna Ashram, right? The sacred Varna Ashram, how dare you call it crutches? Well, I said, like, I never answered all those emails because there's too many emails. And just like if I see 350 emails, my mind just goes like so I didn't answer them. But you know, instead what I did, I gave another lecture about Varna Ashram, and in that lecture I explained actually that Varna Ashram are really crutches. And so in this way, the mode of goodness is not that good. Right? It is sort of a temporary position from where we can deal with the material energy. But the mode of goodness is never a permanent position. Right? It's simply a temporary position. Only taking shelter at the lotus feet of Krishna in devotional service is a permanent position. So, we devotees, or aspiring devotees, we're using both, you know. We're doing transcendental devotional service. But sometimes, do you also have what I sometimes have? That you're in the temple, and you know, Sisi Radha Vallabha are transcendental, Gaurinitai Jagannath transcendental, Prabhupada transcendental, all the paintings on the wall transcendental, the kirtan transcendental, the devotees transcendental, prasadam transcendental, the clothes transcendental, the tilak transcendental, everything transcendental except me. You also have that sometimes? You have those days, you know what I'm talking about, that everything is transcendental except us? For those days, we need the mode of goodness, right? And it's for those days that we regularly try to cultivate the mode of goodness as a habit so that we can always fall back on it. Because then the mode of goodness is our safety net. So we need it
We need it. But it's not really the essence. The essence is being absorbed in all these transcendental things, because that gives us eternal benefit, something that lasts. So we lean on the mode of goodness, and sometimes we retreat on the mode of goodness. The days that we have no taste at all, the days that you're just not in the mood, the days that you have a headache, the days that you're tired, the days that there was too much service, the days that there was a late night program last night and you didn't get any sleep and therefore you hardly had energy to chant your rounds. And that day, the tendency is to say, I stay in bed this morning. But then the mode of goodness says, no. There is a morning duty and you have to take shelter of that. Somehow or other, try and take rest at another time, but at least, right, do something about your sadhana. Even if you don't feel about it, keep something going. Mode of goodness, right? Oh, but I feel, to hell with what you feel. I'm so sorry. Put on boots and stamp on it. Kick them. If that doesn't work, just ignore what you feel and chant Hare Krishna in the morning. Such a heavy class. No, not a heavy class, such a heavy reality. The class is not heavy, but the material world is heavy. And if we really want to overcome it, we have to make a little bit of an endeavor. I'm so sorry. Flower, flower, flower. Rose, rose, rose. Cushion, cushion, cushion. I hope that my heart's words are not cutting too deep in the soft heart, which is like a mango without a peel. somehow or other, I hope that we can take it. We can take it. These harsh words from the mouth of a renunciant. But yes, the mode of goodness means that we take shelter. And how can you do it? Not just by determination. I will do it. I shall do it. That's not the Brahmana. That is the Kshatriya. One story I like very much. It's the story of Karna. Karna was, of course, born as before the marriage of Kunti and as her son, so she put him in the river, just see in some sort of thing, and he was picked up by a family of chariot drivers, a carpenter also, who was was known to be a Sudra. So Karna was not accepted by Drona Acharya as a student when all the other princes came. Karna was such a Kshatriya by nature, he couldn't tolerate it. So he went to the teacher. To the teacher of Dronacharya, Parasaram himself. But Parasaram was not ready to teach any Kshatriya. Well, didn't everybody tell Karna that he was not a Kshatriya? So, when Parasaram asked him, are you a Kshatriya? Then he said no. Alright, then I will accept you. Then he served his guru so nice. And he learned all the arts of fighting, and his guru, right, was so pleased. One day, Guru Maharaj Ji was lying with his head on the lap of his disciple, resting. Karna didn't move, sitting like a statue. His muscles didn't move. Then this insect, it was actually Indra, but anyway, this insect appeared. This insect, it had like a drill on its nose, you know? A big drill, and the incense, this insect went for the leg of Karna, and he just drilled a nasty hole. So it's like, you know, anybody would have just like, jumped up, you know? But Karna, because his spiritual master was resting, somehow or other, he grit his teeth, you know? Tolerated it all.
So his spiritual master shortly after woke up and he saw blood on his leg and he said, "What is this?" You know, well, this insect came with a Black & Decker drill, you know, just went right in my leg. Yeah. And he made a huge hole in my leg anyway. And then Parasaram, who had killed the Kshatriya 17 times, he smelled a Kshatriya. He knew one when he smelt one, and he saw straight away, and he said, "You are a Kshatriya. No one but a Kshatriya could have tolerated so much pain." So this is why I like the story, because the Kshatriya apparently has more tolerance than the Brahmana. Because how does a Kshatriya do it? On determination. I shall do it. Whereas the Brahmana, he is tolerating in a totally different way. He's tolerating on the strength of knowledge, knowing that it is better. It's like there's no alternative. I'll have to tolerate, because if I don't, it just gets only worse. So somehow or other, I must try to tolerate it. But the Kshatriya may be stronger in the moment, but in the long run, how long can he last on determination? So in the long run, his determination may run out. Whereas the Brahmana's determination gets only stronger because his knowledge is getting stronger. So his tolerance is something that lasts in the long term. Therefore, in spiritual life, we need to learn, when we have to tolerate, we have to learn to tolerate in the mood of the Brahmana, not in the mood of the Kshatriya. There's always this tendency to tolerate in the mood, "I shall do it, I will do it, I will get up, the water is not cold enough, throw some ice in the bathing water." Just like, "Let's fast on Ekadasi, dry fast, yes, yes, near Jali Ekadasi, we will start the day before and go on the day after." It's like, you know, we give up all this sense gratification, we will burn out our material desires completely by determination. All this is sort of part of that Kshatriya approach. The Brahmana approach is building up the knowledge and understanding why it's better, and building up some good habits, and then being able to do. But not so much push until you almost break. Stress for Krishna. Stress out for Krishna. Yeah. Surrender. Chant the holy name until your jaws get cramped. Shake your head, you know, while chanting, stamp your foot on the ground until you have a headache and see stars, you know. That's the beginning, the Brahma Jyoti, and then just go on and you will see Krishna.
Like that. So, I find that interesting. Anybody else?
Also maybe advanced in spiritual life.
Kya?
The Kshatriyas are also more advanced in spiritual life than the strong determination forever.
Yeah, the Kshatriya, yeah, that's Bhishma. Bhishma, he had it. Bhishma, he was so advanced. But it said Bhishma did not just have determination based on his Kshatriya nature. Bhishma was also a Rajarishi. He also was very, very learned in scripture. And Bhishmadev also had love for Krishna. Therefore, Bhishmadev's strength was based on three factors. Determination, knowledge, and love for Krishna. So ultimately, those Kshatriyas that last longer cannot do it on determination alone. They need to do it on knowledge and on love, like Yudhisthira. Like that. These three are it. Think about it. Determination, knowledge and love. We just discussed it in the Bhakti Vaibhav in Mayapur when we did Bhishma Dev.
So in the materialistic life, something can be taken, this strength, to go to spiritual life.
From material life, can we take some strength to go to spiritual life? Yes, you can build up some good habits, and in a way, Vajna Ashram is that. Vajna Ashram is material, and by building up good habits, we can use them in the service of Krishna. And if you build up a lot of bad habits, then they will be a problem in the service of, in devotional service. They'll give you trouble. Then you have to break all these bad habits. And in Kali Yuga, everyone has bad habits. So that is the difficulty. Who is determined perfectly in Kali Yuga? Nobody. Everybody is determined imperfectly. And therefore, we need the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. And we pray to Gaur Nitai. And without Gaur Nitai, we're not going to make it. And the proof is a magazine called India Today. We need the mercy of Gaur Nitai. Have you read India Today? You have seen? It's famous. It's like the Indian version of Time magazine. India Today. And that explains everything. How the determination is weak in this age. Look at what a mess it is. India today, compared to the days of Yudhisthira Maharaj. We are weak. We need the mercy of Mahaprabhu. Katam ho gaya. We are finished. Thank you so much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.